Okay. Start on Daf Yud Beis. Start on Daf Yud Beis. In the middle of the widest lines, the first word on the line is Va'amar Rabbi Yosi. Va'amar Rabbi Yosi is like abbreviations. Va'amar Rabbi Yosi. So we'll see again what we started discussing the other day, this halacha, which is one of the most simplest halachas of tefillah, but there's a lot of profundity behind it that's worth appreciating. Va'amar Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Yosi ben Rabbi Chanina said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Hamispalel, a person who davens, Sorich sheyechaven es raglov, must hold his legs together, has to line his legs up and hold them together. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, regarding the Malachim, Veragleim regel yeshora. Their legs are a straight leg, meaning really all they have is one leg. Okay, so we began discussing the significance of this the other night. We gave the shot that when we're davening, what we're actually doing is embodying our true state, our ultimate state, which is in a place higher than the malach. We come from on high. Each of us actually originated under the Kisei HaKavod. We're sent down into this world dressed in this mortal body, but it's really just for a temporary purpose. But ultimately we go back there. A central part of our function in this world is to keep conscious of where we really belong. We are great spiritual beings, greater than the greatest of Malachim, whose place is really with Hashem on the throne, Kiviyachal, as His children. Hashem sends us into this world, dresses us in a little body, but the whole point is, remember where you came from. And therefore, Hashem makes us three appointments a day. We meet Hashem three times a day, Kiviyachal, we report back to Him, in order to remind ourselves, to retain consciousness of where we're really supposed to be. But briefly, because I want to move on to the next thing, very briefly. Go ahead.
Remind what was the purpose of the feet together?
We'll get there. Yeah. So, therefore, when we stand to daven, we stand in a way that resembles malachim. Because, again, when we daven, what we're doing is reconnecting with Hashem. We came from there, we're reconnecting with Him. When we do that, we try to personify as much as we can our state as it is up there. Up there, see that the malachim, the spiritual beings, have only one leg. We manifest that that's where we also are by standing in that way. That's the one leg. Okay, that's what we discussed the other day. I wanted to give a couple of more takes on this because on Maisa the Kadmonim give a lot of very fundamental takes on this from a few different perspectives. This is one idea that the Rashba says. The Rashba says another idea. Different concept. And this is another thing that we have to understand as to what the nature of davening is. Davening, in the most superficial level, is we come to request Hashem what we want. You know, many people might feel, all right, it's a religious thing to do, but I'd prefer to just manage on my own and skip the bother of davening three times a day. But the truth is, davening, even though it manifests as requesting what we want, it's one of the most important forms of service. Davening primarily is service. Avoda shebalev. It replaces what karbanos used to be. That's what we're told. It replaces what karbanos used to be. We're serving Hashem. So, don't just think, well, if I don't have anything desperate to ask for, I don't have to take my davening so seriously. Davening is primarily a duty. You're serving Hashem by davening. And what are you doing? What you're actually doing is offering yourself to Hashem three times a day. That's what you're doing. And therefore, the Marsha says, I'm sorry? And you make, you offer yourself to Hashem, you do that through making a request. Well, let's forget about the request right now. We'll get back to that. But primarily, what davening is, the essence of davening is presenting yourself to Hashem. It's avoda shebalev, giving yourself to Hashem. Reward for duty, right, right. But here it's a little bit of a different take. It's the element of, right now, I forget all my personal issues, I'm offering myself up on the Mizbeach. Now I'm at just giving myself over to Hashem. I don't have other concerns on my head right now. Yes, you're davening for certain things. Fine, that's within the framework of your service of Hashem. But what you're supposed to do is detach from all your material affairs, detach from all your concerns, and where's the karma? The karma really is your mind. Can you manage to give Hashem your focus? That's really what we're sacrificing here. It's not easy. But Hashem says, just give me your focus, your mind, for these three times a day. That's what you're doing when you're davening. Presenting Hashem with your mind, which is yourself. Which is yourself. And therefore, the Maharsha says, when we daven, we stand with our feet together. The truth is that this goes with halacha also. You should have your hands together. This, right? That's what's in halacha. A person should daven this way. What are you doing? What you're showing is, what? It says, I don't know. But what we're doing is, a karban is presented before Hashem in a motionless state. That's it. It lost all ability to move. It's just there at Hashem's disposal. Its feet are tied, right? That's what we do with ourselves. Put ourselves together, hands and feet bound together. We show, now I'm not busy with anything else. I am just bound up absolutely at your disposal. I'm just putting myself before you now, with nothing else on my mind, no other affairs. I'm not busy with anything else. I'm not busy tending to things. I'm not walking back and forth and taking care of things while I'm davening. My feet are together. Right now I'm not able to move. Not my hands, not my feet. Unless your cell phone rings, you stick your hand into your pocket to turn it off. But other than that, you stand motionless before Hashem. I'm giving myself over to Hashem now. I have nothing else to be busy with. That's, the Maharsha says it's even more than that. The Rajma. By stationless, we're signifying that in fact we recognize that we're not able to move at all without Hashem's help. We stand and we ask for Hashem's help in all our different areas. We stand motionless. In other words, saying, Hashem, once you grant me the capability, then I'll be able to move and tend to my affairs. Before that, I'm motionless. I acknowledge that I am absolutely incapable of achieving anything without your assistance. These are some of the things that we signify. Chuckling is a machloikis. There's two opposite approaches, each with its mila. So two approaches. One approach is that yes, you chuckle during davening because you want to involve your whole body in the process. The other approach is don't chuckle when you daven because stand motionless before as you would stand before a king. So which should you do? Both are brought down the halacha. You do whichever one will give you more of a feeling for davening. That's what you should do. Both are legitimate approaches. Each one enhancing the davening from a different angle. Yeah. Okay. Okay, just one last take on this. Here's the Maharal. The Maharal says that by standing together we actually show that we don't really move anywhere. We don't go anywhere. We never go anywhere. Our true state is not going anywhere. What does that mean? That means that I am always only in one place. And what's that? In Hashem's service. I don't step out of Hashem's service. Wherever I go, I'm moving within the frame of Hashem's service. So actually, okay, this is, what's the idea here? The idea here is that my mind, this is the way we're meant to spend our lives, we're always focused on one thing. My life is focused on one thing, one agenda, and I never step away from that agenda. Sometimes it'll require me to do one thing, sometimes it'll require me to do another thing, But it's always with that one agenda in mind. Really, my whole life is to station myself in one place, in Hashem's service. Wherever Hashem's service takes me, that's where I go. But I never step out of that. So the Maharal says, when you're actually standing before Hashem, directly, which is what davening is, like we said, you're busy doing mitzvah throughout the day. You're involved in the material world in Hashem's service, right? When you stand before Hashem, you're reporting to Hashem, so to speak, you're demonstrating, really, I have no other place other than this. I'm standing opposite Hashem, that's the only place that exists as far as I'm concerned. And therefore, even after davening, when I do stop moving again, I'm not moving outside that circle of Hashem's service. Okay. What's that?
I don't know why we lost feet.
We're not moving. That's the point. We don't move. We don't move outside the circle of Hashem's service. That's what we're demonstrating here. Okay. We'll move on to the next halacha. By the way, I'll just note, okay, so, yeah, nobody is surprised to hear that this is halacha l'maisa, and that yes, you should keep your feet together when you daven. Just one thing that I'll add is, and this might be less relevant, but less well known, but it could be relevant, sometimes people have to daven sitting down. Right? There are situations where you daven sitting down. It's important to know that the same thing still applies. When you're sitting down, hold your feet together. The place can stress this. There are situations that justify sitting down. Then don't keep your legs apart as you would naturally sit. Hold your feet together, even when you're sitting. What's that? Better not to shuckle in order to keep your feet together. What do you mean?
Meaning, I'm talking about myself now. There's times when I need to, when I'm doubting, I need to shuckle. I can't, because if I begin to chuckle, I will aggravate.
If a person can't. If you have the... what's that? No, it is halacha. It is halacha. If a person, if your mamish is talking about exacerbating an injury, so there's probably room to be makel. I'll try to check that up, Lina. No. This is said specifically about Shemoneh Esrei. Shemoneh Esrei is the point in davening in which the whole essence of the tefillah is that direct interaction with Hashem. Kriyat Shema is not that. That's why we say, it says, Kriyat Shema eino kim daven b'fnei HaMelech. Kriyat Shema, for example, you're allowed to recite in a bit of a more drunken state than you're allowed to daven in. Right? Kriyat Shema, as long as you're basically aware of what you're saying, you can say Kriyat Shema. But when it comes to tefillah, it's more severe. If you're not in a state that you can actually stand before a king with the proper control, you're not allowed to daven. Shemoneh Esrei in that sense is more stringent than Kriyat Shema. So that's why it comes here also. When it comes to presenting yourself before Hashem, it's a Shemoneh Esrei thing, specifically. Why are there so many requests in there? The answer to this is a couple of things. First of all, you're asking, if we're stressing so much that the whole essence of tefillah is simply presenting yourself to Hashem, what are all the requests doing there? So, on the much simpler level, we'll answer that the purpose of your needs is to give you what to communicate with Hashem about. The avodah is to communicate with Hashem. Now, what are you going to communicate with Hashem about? Hashem gives you all kinds of needs, and now you have what to communicate about. Give me, for example, a mashal to say about this. A person, people often, if anybody has ever went to visit one of the Gedolei Ador, sometimes, when you know you have opportunity to get into a person who is usually inaccessible, but you have to justify what you're coming in for, to try to figure out some question. Why? Because you want to have the experience of interacting with this person. You want to be in this person's presence. You want to have the experience of talking to him. You have to have something to talk about. So you find a question. Right? Now, also a person coming to talk with the king. The really, he hears that now he has the opportunity to establish a relationship with the king. He'll try to figure out things that he needs. Not going to come to the king to offer him. What are you going to offer him? You can't offer him anything. The only thing you can do in an audience with the king is make requests. So a person will come up with requests that he thinks will be a means of being able to be in contact with the king. So therefore, yes, our requests are basically what we might call an excuse to be in touch with Hashem, to communicate with Hashem. But it's a little more than that. It's not that we came up with the excuse. Hashem provides us with the excuse. Hashem provides us with what to communicate with Him about. Hashem wants us to want to communicate with Him. Not all people will naturally be on this level. And therefore, Hashem gives us a very great gift. What's that? Needs. The needs are for the purpose of inspiring us to communicate with Hashem. So therefore, yes, we spend our tefillah. Tefillah primarily is about presenting ourselves before Hashem, establishing a relationship, communicating with Hashem, internalizing our awareness of Hashem. The means of doing that is our requests, our needs. But there's a bit of a higher level also. You should have a higher level of awareness when davening, that the purpose of the requests in a big way is simply to acknowledge the fact that He is capable of granting those requests and that you depend on Him. The request itself is an avodah. You use the request to internalize the fact that you need Him for it and He can do it. Sometimes, Rav Shimshon Pinkus pointed this out. It takes a certain, you have to chop what he's saying. He says, often, even when people daven with kavana, they're more focused on the fact, let's say a person needs a refuah. He davens refa'inu. He's davening refa'inu with intense kavana, more focusing on his intensity is going into how badly he needs the refuah. But instead of focusing it on the fact that he's actually communicating with someone who can provide it, it's a fine point. I see that you're copying what I'm talking about. It's a fine point. But often people more focus on the fact, oh yes, I really need this, I really need this. And therefore they can say with a lot of feeling, what? I really need this. But really the feeling should be focused on the fact that you are conveying that to someone who's listening and can provide. Can provide. So therefore, as you say each bracha, a big focus in our minds should be, by saying the bracha, I am acknowledging that I need Him to help me with this and that He can. And therefore, the bracha, the request itself is service. It's not just that it's a means of communicating with Him, but it's actually a means of developing and deepening your appreciation of your dependence of Hashem and on His of His capability. Okay. Yes, we'll complete this picture with another halacha that does not appear in the Gemara, but is also along these same lines of taking three steps forward before you daven. Right? You take three steps forward. Everybody knows that. What's the idea there? So here also, it's the same idea of you want to consciously approach Hashem. You want to consciously approach Hashem. We've discussed this idea back in the halachas of going to shul. Right? When you go to shul, you should be conscious of the fact that you are engaged in approaching Hashem. It's an end in and of itself, approaching Hashem. And therefore, when you take your three steps forward, you're taking your three steps forward in order to approach Hashem. Hashem is waiting for you to approach, and I am approaching. Stepping into Hashem's presence, kiviyoch. Why three? So there's a few significances of why it's davka three steps. One is simply because there are three instances where we find the Torah talking about someone approaching to daven. That's how the Torah terms davening in a few different places. Vayigash, someone approached to daven. You see that this was inherent in the way davening was always built. You took a step forward to daven. To talk to Hashem. To talk to Hashem.
I'm just wondering if
there's an infinitive after. Well, one of the examples is Avram. Vayigash Avram Vayoyimah, when he was davening to Hashem about Sodom. It says that he approached and he said, what do you approach? He was close to Hashem wherever he was. No. Part of the activity of davening is consciously approaching. which is also mainly an issue of the mind. Right now, I'm clearing my mind of other things and I am approaching Hashem. You do that physically. You take your 3 steps forward, you realize Hashem is here and I'm coming towards Him to speak to Him. Right now, He's saying, okay, your turn. Step forward. Think that before you take your 3 steps forward. Hear the call in your mind. Close your eyes. Hear the call. Hashem says, okay, Yanko, step forward. And you step forward to address Hashem. Now, it's a big question. Typically, how do people start Shemoneh Esrei? They go 3 steps backward and then 3 steps forward. It's a big question. Are those 3 steps backwards really necessary? Or is it just a technicality? You are standing in front of your shtender. If you're going to walk 3 steps forward, you can knock your shtender over. So take 3 steps backward and then approach. So it's a shaila in the poiskim. It's not very clear. It's a shaila in the poiskim. There are poiskim that say that no, it's just the point is to take 3 steps forward. You have a lot of space. If you prefer to push your shtender forward and take your 3 steps, you can do that. You don't need to step backwards. But others say the Kavachayim brings an approach that, no, taking 3 steps backward is part of the process. This is very interesting. I was never aware of this. Taking 3 steps backward is part of the process. Because when you're about to approach Hashem, the thought of it is so overwhelming that you fall back a bit. Now, we actually saw this happen. Where did we see it happen? At Har Sinai. Chazal tell us that the Jews, when they saw what was going on, they backed very, very far up. It's like a very far distance. They just went, and Moshe had to urge them to come forward again. So you see them that mahalach. Now it sounds kind of funny. It sounds like we're acting it out, right? We're playing it out. I don't feel anything. Back, go backward, go forward. I don't feel anything. But what's the idea? The idea with many of these halachas is the principle of Kitzonius, Mayoreus, and Sofnimius. There are a lot of halachas in which we are play-acting. And this is an example. What for? Purpose of trying to work from the outside in. We do these things trying to help the external actions impress upon us the significance of what they're about. And therefore, yes, when you mechanically bounce backward and bounce forward, from now on we could start trying to develop these feelings. What am I doing? I'm stepping backwards because really, it's scary to approach Hashem. And then I take my 3 steps forward. Because Lamaisa Hashem is urging you to do so. He's calling you forward. Even though you find it overwhelming, well, halavai, but you find it overwhelming, you hear Hashem's call and you take the steps forward. Okay. Now, I'll give one more take on this, which is very interesting. Why the 3 steps forward? Again, we saw that we're imitating Malachim. Now listen to this. This is mamish kind of like Dabar v'yipuchoy. We imitate Malachim when we daven. When a Malach wants to approach Hashem, where is Hashem? You know where you have to look for Hashem? Well, where are the Jews? That's where Hashem is. Where are the Jews? Hashem resides among the Jews. So, we'll talk about, essentially, how did it work? There were 3 camps. Let's say we're talking about the days of the Midbar. Or the days of Yerushalayim. There's Machane Yisrael, Machane Leviyah, Machane Shechina. There are the 3 camps. If a Malach is looking for Hashem, needs to report to Hashem, right? Where does he have to go? He has to go through the Jewish camp. Hashem dwells among the Jews. Where is Hashem's headquarters? Right in the center of the Jewish camp. Anybody wants to approach Hashem has to head through the Jewish camp. And therefore the Malachim... What's that?
I thought Hashem is beyond.
But Hashem said, Moshe Rabbeinu wondered about that. But Hashem said, yes, make me a place and that will be the primary place of my presence. That's what the Mishkan is about.
In relation to Allah.
What's that? It was saying that it's even more than that. It's in relation to a lot more than that. Hashem considers His primary place of residence among the Jews. Mind-boggling thought. It's a mind-boggling thought. What's that? What's that? No, Hashem is everywhere. But the truth is, this is a question on anything. Whenever it says that Hashem was in a certain place, what happens to the Uncle Moshe song? Right? The answer is that of course Hashem is everywhere. But Hashem's presence manifests more in some places than others, depending on where he wants his presence primarily to be. It's like Moshe said, Hashem said, make me a mikdash and I'll dwell among them. And he said even more specifically, where? Between the two kruvim. Talking about a space of an amma and a half. Between the two kruvim. That's where Hashem is going to reside. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hena shamayim lo yichalkelucha. The all of the heavens can't contain you. What's the answer? Hashem says, nevertheless, go figure. We can't. It's mind-boggling. If our minds are blown, it should be. But this is where Hashem's presence is. Therefore, yes, Malach who wants to approach Hashem has to make his way through the camp of the Jews. Because Hashem, kiveyochol, is... Well, use these words. A member of the Jewish community. Or the prime member of the Jewish community. But that was how it worked. The person came to Torah in the Midbar in those days. They took him for a Torah. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu lives. That's where Aaron lives. And what's that unusual structure? Well, that's where Hashem lives. Kiviyachol. And therefore, yes, the Malachim had to pass through three camps. When they left, they backed out of three camps. Therefore, corresponding to this, we take three steps forward, and when we leave, we take three steps backward. Amazing thought. Okay. We'll move on. What's that? Yom Shechar Beis HaMikdash Shein Laila HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dalet Amos Shel Halacha Bilvad. Avoisai, straighten your ties. He's right here. Okay. We move on. Va'amar Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Mai diksiv, what's meant by the pasuk that said, don't eat on the blood. Don't eat over the blood. What does this mean? So, simply understood, what this pasuk referring to, the truth is it's an ambiguous pasuk, no matter how you slice it. But lemaisa, halachically, it's construed as prohibiting one to eat from a karban before the blood is thrown. But, how are we construing it? Do not eat before you daven for your blood, before you daven for your life. What's that? Essentially, before Alayis HaShachar is okay. Yes. Meaning, Lamaisa, yes. There is a shita. It's actually the shita of the Arizal. It says, Alti Kabbalah, that after a person went to sleep, meaning before you go to sleep, you can eat. Once you went to sleep and you're waking up for the day, don't eat even if it's before Alayis HaShachar. But that will present that as an extra credit shita, not as the essential halacha. Now, Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Amar Rabbi Yosi ben Rabbi Chanina, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. If a person eats and drinks, and then afterwards davens, all of Akosuvaimer, regarding him, the pasuk says, you have cast me behind your coarse physical body. Now, Al Tikrei Gevecha, don't read your coarse physical body, but rather, Ela Geecha. After your arrogance. Meaning, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when a person eats and drinks, has a full breakfast, and then is ready to daven, Hashem says, La'achar shenisgoezeh, after this person elevated himself, Kibel Malchus Shamayim, now he's ready to come and accept my yoke. Meaning, it's arrogant. Don't start indulging in the world's pleasures before you acknowledge the Creator, realize that He's in control, make contact with him, then go ahead. We've seen many times throughout this Masechta that the Mefarshim put a lot of emphasis on this. You have to feel in the morning as if you were created anew, right? Davening, the point of davening is the first thing you do. You were just created by Hashem. You respond to having been created by talking to Hashem, right? And therefore, if a person is created, suddenly finds himself in this world, says, well, there's a lot of good things around. First I'm going to enjoy, and then I'll get back in touch with the one who just created me. That's haughty. Therefore, no, you must daven first. Now here we have it. As long as it's before Alois HaShachar, essentially you're allowed to eat. Now, there is an interesting machloikis. There's a fine difference in understanding of exactly what the point here is. I'll give the two approaches. At first glance, it might sound like I'm saying the same thing, but we'll see that there's a very subtle difference with a very interesting practical implication. It's two mahalchim here. The first understanding was stated by... Hey, I forgot who, I'm sorry, my mind is a little hazy. But this is the machloikas and the rishonim. That the pshat is as follows. You were just created. Yes, you have needs. You're hungry. You're thirsty. It's 1 minute. On the contrary, in your needy state, you come, you acknowledge that you depend on Hashem for all that. You turn to Hashem and say, I'm weak, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, please provide for me. I know I depend on you. Thank you for creating me. Thank you for giving me a world. Thank you for giving me the means of tending to myself. Please give me the assistance. Then go and take care of yourselves. On the contrary, yes, you should dafka be in your needy state when you approach Hashem to daven. That's approach number one. What's that? Okay. 1 minute. Good. Approach number two is, he said, that might detract from your davening. Approach number two is to go and indulge before davening is haughty. Like we said before, came into this world, you just, first you're going to go dig in, then you're going to turn back to Hashem. That's not appropriate. Is there a difference between the two things I just said? Or did I say the same thing? What? What's the difference? Okay. What? Oh, okay. So actually, you basically hit on the practical implication. This is a question lahalacha. Are you allowed to drink water before you daven? Therefore, if we're going with the first approach, no, you're not allowed to drink water either. The whole point is, don't fulfill any of your needs before davening. Nothing. You feel needy, you feel distressed, you feel uncomfortable, good. That's the state to daven in. That's exactly the idea. The second approach says, no, we're not quite saying that. We're not saying that you have to approach davening in a state of distress. And you don't base towards the bottom. We're saying, don't go digging in. Don't go stuffing your face before davening. Right? Acknowledge you were just created, that you have a boss. But if you're actually in discomfort, sure you can relieve that before you daven. Therefore, you can drink a cup of water. Or, in general, you can do what you need to relieve discomfort before you daven. To relieve discomfort. Meaning, you can approach davening feeling like a mensch. Don't sit down for a royal continental breakfast. Right? But you can do what you need just to be able to feel decent. That's a very interesting implication between the two approaches. What's that? What do you mean? No, he's not saying you should. He's just saying that this precept of not taking care of yourself before you daven doesn't go so far as to say that you can't take care of yourself at all. If for a different reason... You're supposed to be fasting. Okay, you're supposed to be fasting. But he's saying that the concept of that it's haughty to take care of yourself before you daven doesn't mean relieving discomfort. It means it's haughty to really indulge before davening. You say, you know, to make yourself all the breakfast with the full trappings, and then afterwards daven, Hashem says, one minute, don't start digging into my world before you acknowledge that I'm here. But if a person is feeling weak, lousy, he needs something just in order to be able to function, that's fine. So therefore, that's the machlokes between these two shitas lemaisa. You're allowed to take a drink of water to daven. You're allowed to take medicine before daven, etc. Now, essentially, what's that? Oh, so what's with coffee and cake? So the truth is that this is kind of all relevant to this question. The place can discuss coffee. So many people feel that they can't really start the day before they have a cup of coffee. So the Paiskim draw an interesting distinction. They say, you want to take a cup of black coffee and drink it? Fine. Don't add milk and sugar. That's what the Paiskim say. Adding milk and sugar is already sitting down for a geschmacka experience. Right? But that after all, this is after Alei Sashacha, once the time for davening comes. But you want a cup of black coffee? That's fine. And Lamaisa, contemporary Paiskim say that in earlier times, the milk and sugar was a luxury item. Today, a basic coffee is milk and sugar. It's not called a chashev a drink to have a cup of coffee with milk and sugar. And therefore, you can have your normal cup of coffee. Meaning, what people do in the course of an ordinary just getting the day going is not called indulging. People today, having a cup of coffee with milk and sugar is not some unique, special indulgence, right? So therefore, Lamaisa, contemporary post can say, all right, sit down for a cup of coffee. You can even add your milk and sugar, or a cup of tea. Now what about cake? What about mezuzahs? So here we get on to something of a little bit of a grayer area. Again, the Paiskim say, this is the essential halacha, that if you feel weak, that's your problem. It's not that, I'd like to sit down for a good breakfast. But you feel weak, you feel in a compromised physical state, and you want to just be able to feel like a mensch, you can do what you need. And therefore, yes, a person who feels especially weak, feels like he needs to eat something in order to be able to get himself going, essentially can eat something also before davening. That's the essential halacha. Lemaisa, the place can discourage it. Because, see, I'll put it this way. The Rambam put it in an even stronger way. He said, if you feel like you can't daven properly before you have something to eat, you have to have something to eat before you daven. That's how the Rambam put it. It's in keeping with the general halacha. It says in the Gemara, a person feels like he can't focus properly on his davening, sit down and wait. Don't daven without focusing properly. So the Rambam says, if you feel like you need something to eat before you daven, don't daven before you have something to eat. So the Shulchan Aruch says, a cooler. He says, a cooler. You know what? Today, you're allowed to daven without having the piece of cake. Why? He says, because the Rambam was referring to people who really daven properly. Therefore, if you need that piece of cake to daven properly, otherwise you're not going to, don't daven improperly. The Shulchan Aruch says, today, nobody has the right kavana anyways, so you can go and daven without the piece of cake also. So mainly the place can say that, practically speaking, today it should really be avoided. Because today, basically, we're anyways not having the proper kavana. It's like, not like after the piece of cake, your davening is going to be with that absolute full intensity. So therefore the place can say, they discourage it. They discourage actually utilizing this kula because they say, this kula is really meant in order to enable you to daven with the proper intensity. If you're not going to do it anyways, which most of us don't most of the time, don't utilize the kula. So again, we'll say, no, it's not about coffee. Coffee is mamish considered. That the place can do say, drinking these types of drinks, water and even coffee, is just considered clearing, getting the cobwebs out of your eyes. That's okay. That the place can are fine.
Out of a fresh cup.
What's that? I don't know. I don't know. You're saying that what milk and sugar was to the earlier generations, maybe we shouldn't do it today. Maybe don't go adding the French vanilla and the this and the that. I don't know. I could hear such an argument. I don't know. I don't know.
might not eat for like 14 and a half hours. In those cases, though, you're allowed to have these occasions where you don't actually start, you know, in the morning, I mean, so you don't, they go fast or not eating much.
Discouraged.
Discouraged.
I'll just say that. It's discouraged. It's discouraged. I'll say it's discouraged while still leaving it somewhat gray. Meaning, I'm not going to say too strongly that it's discouraged.
What about tea?
No, same thing. Any eating. Any eating. Oh, so some Paiskim argue that Shabbos is worse than Yom Chol. Meaning, even if on Yom Chol you can drink water, some Paiskim want to say that on Shabbos you shouldn't drink water either because they get davening it before Kiddush. You're not allowed to drink water before Kiddush. So therefore, simply understood, you shouldn't be allowed to drink water on Shabbos either. But the Rush, for example, says that no, the Chiyuv of Kiddush only kicks in once you're allowed to eat. Since you're not allowed to eat before davening, the Chiyuv of Kiddush doesn't apply then. And therefore, whatever you are allowed to eat before davening, you're allowed to eat before Kiddush as well. Very interesting, an interesting lumdus, but that's what's accepted by the Poskim Lahalacha. And therefore, after davening, no water or coffee. But before davening, you can have a water, your water or coffee. Very interesting distinction. That's how it works on Shabbos.
The doctor told me that in order to alleviate dehydration, water is not enough. You should add with it even like rice that's flat without so the warning sometimes is just going to put like a third of a cup of water, sorry. Two-thirds water with a little bit of apple juice because it's dehydrated.
Just so for the purpose of getting yourself going, it's okay. Yeah. Okay. That's as far as that goes. I'll just mention one more point. That is, that the truth is that in general, we have halachas with regard to all the different fields. Mincha, Ma'ariv, you shouldn't start a whole meal before davening. Right? But yet, here it's more severe. We're seeing that here it's more than just general, with Mincha and Ma'ariv, the point is, don't start something that might carry you straight through the Zman Tefillah. But here we're saying that it's more severe. It's actually, there's a certain sacrilege in the very fact. Forget about, you can have a Shomer, etc., etc. We know that from Mincha and Ma'ariv, having a Shomer helps, right, appointing someone to remind you, etc. By Shacharis, it's more than that. It's not just the issue of, you maybe you'll forget Shacharis. We're seeing that there's a certain sacrilege in sitting down to eat something before Shacharis. So therefore, there's another important implication. We said that if you eat before Alayis HaShachar, that's fine. But, whereas with Mincha and Ma'ariv, if you started eating before the Zman, you can continue eating into the Zman. By Shachris, it's not like that. If you began before Alayis HaShachar, you should stop once Alayis HaShachar hits. Okay, now those are basically the main points, la'alacha, of this inyan. Okay. We move on. Rabbi Yeshua Oimer Ad Gimel Shois. We go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah said that the Zman of Kriya Shema extends until 3 hours into the day. So Omar, meaning unlike the Tanakama who had said that it ends at Nates, he said that it ends 3 hours into the day. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel Halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, the halacha follows Rav Yehuda that yes, you can recite Kriya Shema up until 3 hours into the day. By the way, we'll just note, as we've said earlier, it's most ideal to recite Kriya Shema before an Etzachama, even if you're not doing that. Even if you're not doing that, the Poskim do say that one should recite Kriya Shema as early as possible. And therefore, for example, oh, so if you're going straight to Davin, no. No, if you're just getting ready and leaving, you're getting ready for Davining, we're going to school to Davin. You're getting ready, getting things together and going out to Davin, fine. But if you're going to be engaged in some other activity before Davining, which generally we saw is discouraged, right? We learned that in general a person should not get engaged in other activities before Davining. But in the circumstances that do justify it, the place can say that a person should make a point of saying Kriya Shema first. So let's say, for example, you have to prepare the kids for school and take the kids for the rounds beforehand. It's good to say Kriya Shema first. No, without a bracha. Without a bracha. What's that? No, without the brachas. Wearing tefillin when you say it, I'm not sure. I don't know. That's right. A person should be wearing tefillin when he says Kriya Shema. In these sorts of situations, I would like to check that out. Okay.
Just push on this issue some more. For those who say obviously less than I am and Sherry Tzara and Yerkas Torah at Shul, I say that in Shul. If I were to say Kriya Shema beforehand, would I say this breakfast then, or should I also hold up on this concern?
So what we'll say in general is, if you are busy before davening, let's say you're busy for an hour and a half at home, there's a little bit of a conflicting interest as far as halacha goes. Because on the one hand, al netilas yadayim should... So, you know what? I won't get into that whole discussion. I'll just say, in answer to your question, it might be good to say Birkas HaTorah and then Kriya Shema, not Al Netilas Yadayim, etc. That you wait. If you usually say that when you get to Shul, wait and you say that when you get to Shul. Okay. Hakarei mikan ve'elach lo hifsi. Now, the next thing we said was that if a person does say Kriya Shema, he didn't make it on time. Misman Kriya Shema. If you say it from that point on, you have not done something wrong. Now, all this means is, you certainly did something wrong by missing the Zman. What we mean is, saying Kriya Shema afterwards is not an Aveir. You know, you're saying Hashem's name, etc., seemingly for no reason. No, saying Kriya Shema afterwards is not an Aveir, because it's like learning Pesukim in the Torah. Oh, so that was saying, yeah, that's an Aveir. That's what the Gemara says later. We apply to that the pasuk that says, "Mu'uvas lo yuchal litkoin." What's messed up can't be fixed up. That's it. You messed up with that. But it's not enough error to say Kriya Shema afterwards.
Why can't you say that you're still mekabel olam of Shemayim?
True. Yeah. And the Paiskim therefore do say that a person who did miss his mom should say Kriya Shema nevertheless because of this. Because he didn't want to be mekabel olam of Shemayim. That's also why, for example. Right. That's right. I also had another point, based on what you just mentioned. We say that generally a person, let's say a person is in a situation where he's going to miss the Zman. He doesn't have tefillin. He's going to be getting tefillin at 11 in the morning. That's after all the Zman. So he's supposed to do the full davening without tefillin. When you get tefillin, you put on the tefillin. Then also we say, when you put on the tefillin, you should say Kriya Shema. For the purpose of being Mekabel Olam HaMalchus Shemayim with the tefillin on. Okay, so therefore, yes, we're saying to say Kriya Shema after the Zman is not an Avera. Missing it is an Avera, but to say Kriya Shema afterwards is not an Avera. It's like reading Psukim of Torah. Now, what about the brachas? You missed the Zman Kriya Shema. What about the brachas? Yotzer Or, etc. Omar Avchista, Omar Mar Ukva. Avchista said in the name of Mar Ukva. Obelvad shelo yoimar Yotzer Or. You can say Kriya Shema afterwards. It's not an Avera, but provided that you do not say the bracha of Yetzer Or. That you can't do. So the Gemara says, Meisave, we're going to challenge that. A Braisa says otherwise. Hakore mikan ve'elach lo yihifsi. A person who says Kriya Shema afterwards does not lose out. Kadam shukar ba'teira. It's like a person reading in the Torah, psukim. But he does say the two brachas before him, Yitzhar, Ava, Rabba, and the one bracha afterwards, V'yatziv, Gal Yisrael. So you see that, yes, even if you miss this man, you do recite the brachas. Tiyuvte de Rav Chisda Tiyuvte. This is a refutation of Rav Chisda. Yes, a person reciting Kriya Shema even after this man says it with the brachas. Now, you might wonder why. You're not fulfilling the mitzvah of Kriya Shema at all. But you may remember that we learned earlier in the Masechta that what we call the brachas of Kriya Shema really are an independent takon. Remember we learned that with regard to Ma'ariv. Now even though we call it the brachas of Kriya Shema, it's a takon in and of itself to say these brachas. You make a bracha on the light, you make a bracha on Torah, you make a bracha on the Geula from Mitzrayim. We say them around Kriyat Shema, but they're not really dependent on Kriyat Shema. Therefore, if anything, they're more associated with Tefillah. And therefore, as long as it's still Zman Tefillah, you can recite these brachas. So therefore, yes, you miss Zman Kriyat Shema, you can recite the brachas nevertheless. Okay, we'll see. You're picking up on a good point. Let's see. Ika da Amri, a different version of what Rav Chisda said was, Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Mar Ukve, my lo yifsid. What does the Mishnah mean that when it says that if you say Kriyat Shema afterwards, you didn't lose out? Shelo yifsid brachas. This is exactly what the Mishnah is signifying. That by saying it afterwards, you don't lose out on anything that you would have otherwise had if you were saying it at this man. I.e., you don't lose the brachas. You lose the mitzvah of doing it on time. But as far as the physical process of reciting Kriyat Shema, it's a little different if you do it afterwards. You say it with the brachas. Tanya Nami Hachi. Now we have a brisa corroborating this. Hakare mikan ve'elach lo yifsid. If you recite Kriyat Shema afterwards, you don't lose out. Ke adam shekare b'Torah. It's like a person reading psukim of Torah. Aval mevarichu shtayim lefanel ve'achas la'acharel. You do recite the two brachas beforehand and the one bracha afterwards. Okay, so Stan asks, up until how long? What happens if you first get around to it at 4 in the afternoon? Is it then 2? So this is a machloikis in the poiskin. The general consensus is, meaning the bottom line is, that we generally associate the brachas with the Zman Tefillah. Which means that you can say the brachas as long as the Zman Tefillah, which is 4 hours into the day. Now, some add that since with Tefillah, if you miss the Zman Tefillah ba'oinis, you can continue saying tefillah until chatzos. The same applies to the Birkas Kriyat Shema. And the Mishnah Berurah Lamaisa concludes that, yes, if you are in Oynes, you can say the brachas of Kriyat Shema up until chatzos, just like tefillah. What's that? No, not tashlumin. There's a machlokes about tashlumin for Kriyat Shema if you miss the zman. Lamaisa, we pass it, there's no such thing. What's that? Well, the point of these brachas were nitka. It's kind of like the Shemana Esrei of Shachas. These brachas were established to be said in the morning because that's how you start your day. Kind of like the Shemana Esrei of Shachas, and therefore they go with the Shemana Esrei of Shachas. What's that? If it wasn't an honest, then not up till the 4 hours. Yeah. Okay. Tanya Nami Hachi. Now, I'll just note an interesting point in Halacha, and we'll conclude with this. Rabbi Yehuda asks, why did it have to be stressed? Chiddush. You say Kriyat Shema afterwards, it's not an Aveira. It's like learning Torah. Does anybody here not know that Kriyat Shema comes from the Torah? You can sit down and learn Pesukim from the Torah whenever you want. So Rabbi Yehuda says something interesting, and this is an interesting point in Halacha. He says that, no, Kriyat Shema Lemaisa is different than other psukim. Because we know that generally you're not allowed to say psukim by heart. You're not allowed to recite passages of Tanakh by heart. Because of the rule of Dvarim Shebiktav Yatorah Shelemon Baal Peh. Things that were given over in writing must be kept in writing. You read them from inside, you don't say them by heart. But things that you have an independent chiyuv to say, and it's already not being said in the capacity of Torah learning. Kriyat Shema, something the Torah requires you to say twice a day, not as Tanakh, just as something the Torah wants you to say. This you're allowed to say by heart. Anything that's obligatory to say for a different reason, you're allowed to say by heart. And therefore, this mission is actually signifying that even if you miss this man Kriyat Shema, you can continue reciting it just as though it was still this man, meaning you're allowed to say it by heart. That's the chiddush here. Anything that is essentially obligatory, you're allowed to say by heart, even when the obligation doesn't apply. Therefore, also the psukim of Birkas Kayanim. Since there's sometimes a mitzvah to say the Birkas Kayanim, you can say that by heart also. Okay, we'll stop there.